There is something that men must have, or at least Franklin, that the minute my shirt comes off, something goes off in his head and he can like get to me in 5 seconds with his hands for my boobs. Are we allowed to talk about boobs?
Sure.
Okay, good.
IKR, I know, right? Is a podcast about women for women. Hosts Allie and Latasha, along with special guests, explore the hidden world and narratives going on inside the heads of everyday women. What makes them tick and how they wrestle with stuff like God, work, family, friends, success, failures, coffee, and Netflix. Real conversations with real women. Let's go. I don't know about you guys and you, Allie, but when I get dressed in the morning, there is a real conversation that goes on in my head, specifically about how I cover up the body part that I do not like the most. Like my entire dress has to do with covering up or minimizing the look of that. And today we're going to be talking to a lady who knows all about body image. Isn't that right?
That's right. Her name is Jenny Baker, and she's just released a new book called The War on Normal. And she and a friend of hers have written a book after lots of research about women and how we feel about our bodies. And a special shout out to any moms, because we all know that having a baby wreaks havoc on your body. So there's also a lane of her book that's focused on how women feel about their bodies post-baby. So we're just going to have at this topic, because I think you're right. Inside of our head, we have a running conversation with ourselves about our body. And we're going to tackle that today. We're going to pull it out of the dark. We're going to throw it down on the table.
Oh, you know what? We need to...
We're doing this.
Yeah, it's a wrap. Let's do it.
All right.
All right. This is the one about body image and boobs.
Hey, so I'm Jenny Baker. You have to say it all together. You can't
Jenny
say
Baker.
Jenny Baker. It's mm-hmm. Jenny Baker. So I'm from Chattanooga. Used to live here in Cincinnati. One of the adventures that brings me back to Cincinnati now is a new book that I just launched.
So tell us a little bit about it. What's it called? What made you write it? What's the idea of the book?
So the book's called The War on Normal: How to Find Contentment in Your Post-Baby Body. But it really doesn't matter if you've had kids or not for this book, because it really is written for all women. And we're finding that all women, no matter where they are in life, if they're young, in menopause, or older, they all struggle. We all struggle with body image in our first world culture. And so I decided to write the book because my journey with contentment with my body has been rocky, tumultuous, and is now, I think, coming to a much healthier place than it's ever been before. So I was athletic growing up, and I loved sports and being outside. And my mom thought that perhaps if I did some of those things, I would get big legs, or it would affect the way my body looked in a negative way. And so, for example, she would say things like, "Don't be a soccer player, you'll get big legs." But I loved soccer. So I assumed then and resigned myself to the idea that I was gonna have big legs. I didn't know if big legs were good or bad, but the way that my mom talked about them assigned them the value of bad. And so I took on that assignment that big legs are bad. And then there were also the comments my Grandma Nance, she would stand in front of the mirror and grab her stomach. And she would say, "Oh, the Nance pooch. I hope you don't get the Nance pooch." And so I didn't know what a pooch was. I didn't know why it was bad, but I knew whatever looked like that was bad. And so all of these little things that people would say stuck to me as a young kid. And I carried them, they planted themselves deep in my soul, and I started realizing at an older age that those seeds were growing into unhealthy behaviors because I was believing lies. And they would grow into things like not eating, staying at the gym for 4 and 5 hours, purposely keeping up with calories and keeping them below a certain number. And the more I got into that and I let those things grow up, the unhealthier they became. Until I got to college and got unhealthy with anorexia. And I really had to fight to come out of that, and community and the Holy Spirit brought me out of some of those places. And I thought that I was in a place of health. I was feeling good about who I was, feeling good about how I looked, and then I had a baby. And all of those things came back. And I thought the things I thought that I had grown from and I was done with and finished with just came flooding back. And I mean, the enemy isn't a creator, so he can't come up with anything new. So he likes to continue those narratives in our heads that we've believed in the past. And he likes to take us back to those. And so he started taking me back to those things because my body, once again, was in a different place. It had changed. And I didn't know how to handle that change. And so I realized rather quickly my options were to either go back to that place of unhealth or fight new and figure out how to navigate change and navigate this narrative in my head in a way that honored God and honored myself. There are hundreds of us. I think every woman struggles with some type of narrative in their head that tells them they're not good enough. And so I deeply want for myself and for other women freedom to be content in the body that the Lord has given them and know what freedom in that area looks like.
So explain the book title. It's called The War on Normal.
Right.
Tell us where that came from and what's normal. What do you mean?
I hate the word normal. That's why we titled the book, The War on Normal. I started realizing when we had kids, you take your newborn kid to the doctor, and they tell you, like, they give you a page when you leave of what percentile your child is in,
based
on how big they are, how little they are, their head size. And so you all, as this new mom, I'm like freaking out because I'm like, my kid's in the 10th percentile. They're going to die. I'm going to fail them. Like, they're going to be stupid because their head is too small. And so our culture, the doctors and magazines and the media, they define what those things are in terms of value. So they will tell you, if your kid is below the 50th percentile, that's not good. They really want them at the 50th percentile. They want them average. That normal is, and we will use that word. Well, you sound normal, or that looks normal, or I don't think that that's normal. And we throw this word around when really what we should be saying is, oh, that's different. And different isn't bad. Different is valuable. So what happens is we start creating this definition of normal based on other people. And we say, okay, through my observations, what am I seeing consistently? What messages? I'm seeing billboards. I'm seeing TV shows, magazines. In American culture, this is what normal is communicated to us as. Big boobs, tight butt, skinny, long, beautiful, shiny hair, perfect makeup, and young. Always young. Mm-hmm. And so because those are the messages that we're getting, we start to define our normal based on somebody else's false narrative of normal. Mm-hmm. And then we feel inadequate because we don't measure up to this standard that we've created of normal. And so then the enemy gets in and we start feeling undesirable in our marriages. We feel inadequate as moms, as women, as working women. And then we even feel fear of being vulnerable about anything that we might be struggling with that doesn't match up to our perceived idea of normal. And so then we're in isolation because who's going to talk about that stuff? So then the isolation sets in. And I mean, the statistics on depression and anxiety in women are staggering right now. I mean, they will make you cry if you really get into these statistics. And so we decided in this book, like, let's start fighting these preconceived ideas of what normal is for every woman and start changing the narrative and changing the perspective and saying no.
I was at the gym. That's why I'm wearing a hat. And I have to decide how much time is this worth in my day? Because if I don't make that decision before I walk into the gym, I'll stay.
Yeah.
And the one class that I like to take rolls into the next. And she always says, well, now we're going to move on. And I'm like, I have to go. This is only worth 30 minutes of my life. I'm out. And so otherwise, I will get sucked down this path of I should stay because I would look better if I stayed longer. And I have to push that down my list of values on purpose, or it'll suck me in. And so sometimes I'll go like, I should stay, but I gotta go. because this is not the most important thing I'm going to do with my day. It's important. I want to be healthy. I want to be strong. I want to be fit. I just turned 40, right? For me, it's a constant conversation. And yes, as I even talk to women, I'm sure you talk to lots and lots of women for your book. One of the things that I found most fascinating was that usually women can name the parts of their body that they despise. Mm-hmm. And the more I, and even through my conversations with them, I realize, oh, I have a body part too.
Okay, what's yours?
Mine is my stomach, right? Yes, around my belly button.
Mine too.
Right around my belly button.
That's my
stomach thing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I've got issues.
What happens too with that is when we don't acknowledge those things in our lives, we start emotionally leaking in our relationships.
What do you mean?
There is something that men must have, or at least Franklin, that the minute my shirt comes off, something goes off in his head and he can like get to me in 5 seconds with his hands for my boobs. I noticed for a really long time that I would quickly put another shirt on. Like I would literally lay a shirt next to me if I was coming home from work, mm-hmm, like a t-shirt down so that I could take my dress shirt off or whatever shirt and then put my t-shirt on real quick so there wasn't an opportunity for him to get his hands on my boobs. Or if he was coming, like I would shimmy out of his hands, like shimmy out of his arms, and I would reject his pursuit and his affections because the narrative in my head when he would grab my boobs was, oh my gosh, they're so little and they're so saggy. I'm so sorry, Franklin. And I felt like I needed to apologize for the way my body looked. And there's no reason I needed to do that. He never said anything but wonderful and encouraging things about my body. But these emotions that I had, these beliefs that I had that I refused to actually get down and dirty with and heal through and find freedom from, they would emotionally come out and leak into my marriage. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize the negative effect that was, and not a detrimental effect, but I was missing out on deep intimacy and connection with my husband because of these things that I just like shoved to the side.
And have you found in talking to other women as you wrote the book that that's a pretty common experience in relationships, in intimate relationships?
Yeah. And even this idea of like, what would life look like if we believed our partners? Like, and we believed what they said about our bodies. How would things be different? Because we create this crazy cycle in our relationships where because of our insecurities and the narrative that we're hearing in our mind about we're not good enough, we're not pretty enough, we act from those thoughts and feelings. So thoughts and feelings drive behaviors. Then when we behave, we push our partners away. Well, then they feel rejected.
Right.
Even if they can't articulate it, they feel somewhat wounded and rejected. So then they pull away from us, which then makes us as women feel inadequate, undesirable. Right. So then we pull away from them, and then it's this ugly, unhealthy cycle of pushing, pulling, pushing, pulling.
Yes.
But when we believe what our partners say about our bodies and we embrace that truth and we choose to believe it even if we don't feel it and we choose to push into them and trust them, then they feel connected to us, which then drives them acting more fun or more encouraging, more affirming, which then makes us feel more content and better, which then pushes us closer into them. So we can either push closer into each other because we're choosing to believe truth, or we can create tension in our relationships that we don't even realize because we're emotionally leaking things we won't deal with.
Listening to you say that, it reminds me of, you know, we have affectionate nicknames usually in our close relationships with our husbands, our kids, our best friends, or whatever. So he would often call me beautiful, like as a name, not as a compliment, but as a name. And it was almost like I didn't hear it. I couldn't hear it. He would say it and it would just push, it would just roll off of me. And when there was a particular moment where I felt like as I prayed that God was trying to help me understand how he sees me, and he used the word beautiful, and then it was like this light bulb went off that for years my husband had been calling me that name. And I'd never really, I don't think I'd ever believed him or received it one time.
Wow.
It felt like a gift, both from my husband and from God, sort of all rolled together in one that I'd never even come close to receiving.
Right.
And it was just a really cool moment for me to go, okay, what if I can just think that?
Yeah.
Could it really be that easy?
Right.
Could I really just go, wait, I think I'm beautiful? Is that possible? It was almost too easy.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like, right. Nope.
Like, no.
I've got to work for this. I need to do some things before. I need to look a certain way, be a certain size before I'm going to believe you.
Mm-hmm.
And yes. He was like, nope. He's been calling you that for years, and you've had four babies, and you've looked all kinds of different ways, and he's called you that
right
the entire time.
And the interesting thing is especially with us women, like we have these assumptions that we've carried around about ourselves that then we project on other women, and it hurts our connections with other women. The standards and the assumptions I have about other women actually say more about what I think about myself and my body than they do what I really think about other women. The only way we're going to turn this ship of contentment with our bodies is by not assuming things about each other. Like, and here is why I'm saying this. There was a time when I believed I did not have the right to write a book like this. One, I struggle with body image still, and so therefore, why should I ever write something like this? And then two, people might look at me and say, you don't have a right to write a book like this. You don't look like someone who should write a book about body image. That's not true. Like we all of us women have something, because I think that's the enemy. I mean, the Lord fearfully and wonderfully created us. We're made in his image, and we're uniquely made as women with unique qualities and characteristics that reflect him that men do not have. And I think if there's anything that the enemy wants to come against, it's our identity is beautiful, our identity as valued and treasured. Mm-hmm. And so every woman will struggle with this at some point, because mm-hmm. that's how the enemy works. He wants us to not believe we are chosen daughters. Mm-hmm. And we've got to stop assuming that we're the only ones. We've got to stop labeling people as, yes, you are an authority on this and you can speak on this, or no, you can't because you look this way or you live this way. Mm-hmm. And we've genuinely got to come together and start talking about things like this, like starting this conversation and saying no more assumptions, no more hiding, no more isolation. Like, let's talk about it.
Okay, so I have this moment where I'm realizing, you know, when your best friend just kind of shows up for you, and usually you're connected to whoever you think of as your best friend in a special way. And I had my first baby, and I wasn't feeling very good about my body, which is exactly the topic of your book. And do you know what she did for me? She said, you look awesome. I'll be there in a couple of hours. Just wait for me. She went to like 6 different stores, bought 5 different sizes of like, and 10 different styles of jeans, showed up in my kitchen and went, put all of these on until you feel like one of them is going to fit and you're going to look amazing. You're going to feel yes. like you look
yes.
and find them right here. And if none of these work, I'll do it again. She was like, gosh. Find a pair of jeans that make you feel like I can already see that you look.
Yeah.
You look great. Who cares what the size is? I've got 10 styles and 10 sizes. Just put one on until you feel amazing, because you look great.
She got in the trenches with you.
Yes.
Like, she got down.
Yeah.
She didn't just bring you food and, like, yep. say, hey, you're beautiful.
No, nope. She was like, you feel bad.
There. Yes.
And I'm not going to have it. I'm going to go get you some jeans until you feel like yourself again.
She was fighting for you.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah, and that's the beautiful thing when we fight with each other as women.
Yes.
Instead of against each other, like we then pull each other down the road towards deeper contentment. And the thing though that takes is empathy. The ability to empathize, like first of all, feel what we feel, but then also be able to get in the trenches with other women and feel what they feel with them. Mm-hmm. Like sympathy is, like if your friend had brought you food and been like, hey, I have 5 butts left. Like, you look cute, but I got to go. Mm-hmm. Empathy is that she went and got you jeans, came with you and felt what you felt and processed and journeyed through that with you.
Yeah.
And I imagine that at the end of that, you felt more loved, more
Absolutely.
Cared for, and more content
yes.
with where you were than if she had of high five butt slapped you and left.
Right.
So those are the things that we also have to start doing for each other as women, is getting in the trenches and feeling what we all feel.
Do you find that most women are more generous toward other women than they are toward themselves?
In areas that they don't themselves personally struggle in. So I found that women are a lot more harsh on other women in areas that they struggle in themselves.
Okay.
They're more generous in areas where there's not a struggle. Like for me,
is it a matter of feeling kind of threatened by someone
well,
else?
Well, it's not, yes, but not because I'm jealous of someone else, but because you bring out and remind me of all the insecurities that okay. I have about those things.
Interesting.
Like boobs. Like, I love boobs. And because I've never struggled with, like, I mean, I have way little boobs. I would love big boobs, but I don't, like, that's not like a struggle of mine. So like I said earlier, my stomach is a struggle of mine. So like I will compliment women's, I won't on the street compliment their boobs, but like if you had a like great shirt on where your boobs look good, I'd be like, Allie, your boobs looking good today. But what I've noticed about women and where I will find myself judging the quickest mm-hmm. is stomach.
Interesting.
And it's because that's my struggle. Okay. And it reminds me, I hate my stomach.
Yeah.
Like, I hate your stomach because it reminds me of my stomach, which mm-hmm. then reminds me that my...
So it's like, it's just a fixation yeah. on that thing.
So interesting, we place value on body parts based on what we're told by our culture. Mm. So like you go to South Africa, go to Haiti, and ladies are like popping out boobs left and right, feeding your kid, feeding my kid. So the first time I went to South Africa with Crossroads, we were doing this medical thing. And so this woman's like breastfeeding this kid. And I was like, oh, is this your baby? And she's like, no. I'm like, oh. She's like, mine's over there on somebody else's boob, in so many words. And it's totally fine. Allie's face, for those of you who can't see, is like gaping mouth, like crazy eyes. It's impressive. I bet Bill is proud of you. But in South Africa, breasts aren't sexualized. That culture doesn't say these are a sign of your womanhood, your beauty, mm-hmm. and your sexual prowess. But here in America... That is a culture and media in particular perpetuate this idea that breasts, yes, they can be functional, but you should cover them up when they're actually functional and don't show anybody that you're feeding and nourishing a child. Cover them up. But if you want to like put them up in a push-up bra and display them for the world, that's beautiful and that's sexy. I mean, and even like the billboards, there's this new term called mommy makeover that the plastic surgeons are starting to promote where it's a tummy tuck, a liposuction, and a boob job. All at the same time.
Wow.
The mommy makeover. And what that tells us is you're broken. Like, if you don't measure up to this standard that we see valued and celebrated, then you're broken and you need to be fixed. So boobs, butt, stomach, and then like skin and face are the big ones.
Right.
Plastic surgery, right, isn't bad. It's the motives that propel us to make that choice. I have friends who have had breast cancer and they've had mastectomies, mm-hmm. and so they've chosen to have a breast implant. That motivation isn't coming from a place of believing a lie. It's the things that we do that come that are motivated by a lie, mm-hmm. that we're inadequate, need to be fixed. And so that then too is communicated to our kids. Like, oh, you're just going to, aging or having kids is going to lead me to feel discontent and unhappy with my body mm-hmm. and how it functions and how it looks. Mm-hmm. And so then they get that belief. And so then when things are different for them, they label it bad. Yep, here it is. Mom said this is going to be bad because of how she talked about herself. Mm-hmm. And so then they behave out of that. And then their kids get that same narrative too. And so we have got to stop that conversation in our heads, or at least stop saying it out loud. We have to start choosing something different. And sometimes actions have to happen first to get our emotions to follow along.
Definitely.
And it would be nice if we all felt things first and then we could just behave mm-hmm. out of those things. But we have to make choices. Yep. And we have a choice what we choose. Do we choose truth or do we choose somebody else's truth?
We seem to understand that reality with external things. But internally, we tend to think anything I feel is the truth.
Yes.
And we live in a culture that tells us that that is right.
Right.
And so whatever I feel, whatever I think, that's my truth. And there's no standard by which we can check ourselves. Right. At the very least, if we would just let it out of our mouth every now and then, other people could go, wait, no, stop. For me, the ultimate standard is, what does God say here? I understand that's not everybody's ultimate standard, but if I would just allow the fact that there might be something else that could be true other than my own thoughts, mm-hmm. now we're going to get somewhere.
Right. So think about those narratives, those thoughts that we hear when we look in the mirror and we're like, oh, okay. And you feel like, oh, man, today I'm not going to wear that shirt because today's a bad day. Mm-hmm. I just, today's a bad day because my stomach, like, I ate beans for dinner. I'm a little gassy, so I got to wear the loose pants instead of the tight pants because my stomach's pooching out. So how do those feelings, how do I feel when I embrace those thoughts? I feel really like, I don't want to feel that way. And that for me was, I'm tired of feeling this way.
Yes.
Okay, if I'm tired of the feelings that these beliefs are producing, mm-hmm. then I've got to change my beliefs if I want to feel differently. Mm-hmm. So if what I said was true is not leading to peace and contentment, then what will lead to peace and contentment? Mm-hmm. There was this guy in the Bible who wrote, and he said, whatever is true, whatever is pure, whatever is noble, admirable, lovely, think about those things. And so well, let's try that. Let's just try, instead of my eyes go to my stomach and I go, blah. Okay, well, wait, what is admirable and lovely in this moment? Man, my stomach birthed kids. Like, it grew kids and pushed them out, and they are amazing. My stomach has carried me through countless races and climbs up mountains and adventures. It's carried me, I mean, every day in a grocery store, library, work. My body is amazing and is so capable. And when I shift that conversation and when I shift my focus to what really is true, all of a sudden what was making me feel discontent and not at peace becomes untruth. Because I am inundated then with way more real, noble, beautiful things than the ugly lies.
Okay, so if you could tell women to adopt some daily practice, what would you tell them to do? If they said, okay, you've got me. This is totally me because it's most of us. Now what do I do?
Choose. Like, realize you have a choice and start choosing different. Even if it feels weird, even if it feels like a lie, just choose different. When you stand in front of the mirror, don't choose to nitpick that area. Like, just don't do it. Choose not to. Choose to hit it and move on. When you realize your mind's gone there, nope, that's not true. I'm moving on. When your spouse or your partner hugs you or, you know, wants to connect with you, let them. Choose it. So my big thing with this is, I hate having sex with the lights on because I'm really insecure about how I look. In writing this book, I'm like, I'm going to choose it, dude. Like, I'm afternoon sex, here we come. I started choosing it, and it was uncomfortable and weird and amazing because Franklin felt so honored and valued and listened to that he got super excited, which then made me feel super beautiful and excited and content. And it was just... But I had to choose that, even in the discomfort. Like, be uncomfortable in making that choice. Like, it's worth it to choose truth rather than give in to the lie that plays in our heads over and over.
Great. Thank you. Anything else you want to tell us?
Oh, yeah, actually, one thing. So, community. Like you were saying with your friend, like, we have to be in community with this stuff. Like, we can't do it alone. We are all in our heads way too much mm-hmm. and not in relationships enough. And so having a friend that you can call up and say, I'm feeling a particularly type of crazy today and ugly. I just want you to know that. And then letting them be that voice of truth to you it will make all the difference in the world. Besides the choose truth, like, I would say, find people who you can talk about this stuff with, and then be honest and don't fear vulnerability. Because know that they have it too. If you've got it and you share it, they'll probably want to share their stuff too. And then you'll just be amazing friends who spur one another on to freedom and contentment. That's what I got. The War on Normal. It's on Amazon. Just get on Amazon because we all got Amazon Prime these days. Buy some for your friends. And then read it with your friend and ask them about it. Ask them about it. Thanks for letting me come. It was great. I don't want to leave.
IKR is a production of Crossroads Church, Cincinnati, Ohio. Reach out to us using the hashtag IKR or email us at ikr@crossroads.net. Very special thanks for our music to Mae Klingler. Find her at mayklingler.com and more of her music on Spotify and iTunes. You will not be sorry you did.